And when we faced extinction, I offered a solution.
Genocide.
But random, dispassionate, fair to rich and poor alike. They called me a madman.
Welcome back to A Stark Contrast, where we discuss the differences and similarities between Marvel Comics and their MCU counterparts. And we're your host, Jeffrey.
And I.
Hello, hello, and welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, Jeff.
To the, this is the last,
the last
character
episode.
Study yeah. of the year.
Yup.
Whoa.
Crazy, right?
I know.
It always feels like. It's like, oh yeah, we're just pumping them out and we got all these episodes yeah. going. And it's like, oh wow, another season coming to a close.
And never missed.
Never missed one drop date.
I know.
That is an achievement. Because yeah. even my favorite podcast, they're like, we're not doing it this week.
Yeah.
Like, they're very just like, and they're one of the biggest podcasts sure. in the world.
Yeah.
But even they have been like, nah, we can't do it. We can't do it.
Yeah.
So for us to have that achievement, I think is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Personally,
I agree.
Yeah. I think it's awesome. But yes, this is the last character study before the end of the year, before the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to close out with a big one. But before we get to all of that, so we have the latest news. First up, Marvel TokeCon, last weekend.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
The gameplay. So I was part of the beta testing and I played on Saturday, and I gotta say it's pretty solid. I recorded my entire gameplay.
Nice.
I did on camera as well, and I put the video. It's up on YouTube.
Oh wow.
We have the video. Jeff didn't know.
I didn't know you recorded it.
Yeah, I recorded it. I did all the things, and so the video is up on YouTube. It is up there to see. I quite literally did picture in picture, so you can see me playing while I'm on screen.
Hell yeah.
And so it's so solid. Like, there weren't glitches per se. I think mm-hmm. there were some things they could have done better as a game navigation
sure.
type of thing. But the animations are solid. The voice acting is incredible. The music is good. The fighting sequences are amazing. And so it's basically, if you have ever enjoyed a Street Fighter game or mm-hmm. a Capcom game for that matter, and you love Marvel, right up your alley. Because the combination, it's 4x4. Whereas traditionally, it's always been one, sometimes three, and now it's full on 4v4.
Uh-huh.
So, you can see me play as Iron Man, Captain America, Ms. Marvel, Star-Lord, and Storm in our video. But there is 8 characters total, including Dr. Doom, Robbie Reyes, Ghost Rider. Yeah, it's a long video, too. So there's also that. It's like I cut it in half, actually,
oh, wow.
because I literally had my entire gameplay. But I shaved it down to just like key points and some notes that I was making during the gameplay. Really enjoyed it, though. I don't remember when it's coming out. But I do have a long survey to fill out.
Uh-huh.
My coworker told me about it too, because he's on it. And he had the same idea. He just got into Marvel vs. Capcom 2.
Mm.
Like, he just bought it.
Okay.
He's never played it in his life. And so he was part of the beta testing, and he's super into it too. So I think it'll appeal to any gamer of any kind. But yeah.
Looks good.
Will be interesting to see how it develops and how well people receive it. But so far, you got a 2 thumbs up from me. I think it's really good. And speaking of games, Marvel Rivals finally revealed its latest offerings for season 5.5, and Rogue has officially been confirmed as a bona fide Vanguard.
Ooh.
So she is a tank. And Jeff,
wow.
if you see this video, girlfriend is OP. Way OP. Because if you know anything about Rogue, what does Rogue do best?
Dude.
She absorbs.
Touches people. Oh.
She can like Gambit would say, you are correct, sir. But she can literally absorb the powers of anybody.
Literally says the title.
Yeah.
Tempted to touch. Character review.
There it is. Yeah, so Rogue is a tank. She's got this
wow.
She absorbed some of the chronovium, uh-huh. I guess is what they call it, crystal power. So the backstory is a little different, but she can absorb the abilities of any character in the game. Mm-hmm. So that, on top of the fact she's super strong, I know Jeff's watching it right now and he's making faces. It's crazy. And of course, voiced by Lenore Zann on top of that.
Even crazier.
Yeah, she's incredible. She looks very overpowered, but I'm open-minded. Making faces, like, it's crazy.
Oh, she's good. Oh my god,
yeah,
that's her ult. She takes
she takes powers, and then she says like, everything's mine or something.
Oh my god, she just took Doctor Strange's. Oh my god,
yeah, she can do everything. It's kind of scary. I'm curious.
Wow,
I'm curious what she can take from like somebody like Rocket or Bucky, because they don't have like powers per se.
Well, I just saw she took somebody's
Psylocke.
She took Mantis's powers.
Yeah, see, but they're like powers, you know what I mean? So I'm curious if they're just some people she can't do it with.
She probably can, but it's also just like, why would you do that?
Why would you do it?
If there's like other people's powers.
Well, it's like Loki when he's like, your powers are mine, and then he turns into Rocket, and you're like, what are you doing, bro?
Yeah.
What are you doing? So it's going to be really interesting, because of course her triple team up is with Magneto and Gambit. She has a team up with Gambit as well. And then, she's going to be a heavy hitter, really heavy hitter.
Yeah.
I can't wait to play her, but I know I'm not going
to
get
the first comment is like literally a perfect segue. The first comment of that video is, I can't wait to be able to play Rogue a week after the
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. If you want a shot at playing her in actual gameplay, it's probably going to take a week or two. That's how long it took me for Gambit. I had to fight. Even then, like, it was really a fight. And so we'll see. But yeah, there's also like new outfits. There's a holiday pack coming.
Of course.
It's kind of funny because Mr. Fantastic looks like a toy soldier, a nutcracker. And then Squirrel Girl has a cute little outfit. Bucky is basically a reindeer stripper. He's got like a sexy Santa outfit, and he's got a wreath around his neck and a little reindeer ears. I'm like, they're like, give us your
money. They're like, screw it, let's get sexy on them.
Give the money. But not sexy. Rocket has a cool, like, Thieves Guild outfit that matches Gambit's. And I was like, ooh, they read my mind. but yeah, related, actually. So as we've discussed before in Marvel, they have this marketing tactic where they kind of make things intersect. Mm-hmm. And so they have been releasing Marvel Rivals comics and prequels. And so they released a prequel last week about Gambit and Rocket, and somebody else was helping him in this comic. And Rocket had the same outfit that he now is getting in the game. So it's like, okay, got it. I see what you're doing. So they're introducing these side stories. Then they turn into microtransactions. They just want all the money.
Of course, you need money. You need money for a free game somehow.
Yeah, exactly right. So it'll be fun. That is officially out as we're dropping this episode on Saturday. So if you're not playing yet, now's a good time. Now's a good time, especially before the holiday break, if you're lucky enough to have one.
Yes.
So as far as other news goes, holy moly, we have quite a bit, and it's all pretty much MCU bound. So Spider-Man Brand New Day has officially wrapped filming, and people are still not sure who the big baddie is in the film.
As we should.
But the film still holds strong to its July 31st, 2026 premiere date. So they're officially in post. We'll see what happens, but the marketing will probably start hitting come May, I guess.
May.
2 months, maybe even April, depending. And then speaking of Spidey, Spider-Man Noir, or Spider-Noir, as they're calling it, is garnering more buzz with the release of its official poster, also confirming that the Spider-Man in Noirverse is in fact Ben Reilly and not Peter Parker.
I know you're not too thrilled.
I'm not too thrilled, but I've said this before, is that the comic book version is literally like 16 or 17.
Sure.
So if it's going to be Nick Cage's face, just make him a different person. That's fine. But it is interesting because it changes the narrative. Like, why is he doing what he's doing? Why is he Spider-Noir? And what is the backstory, considering his name is quite literally that of Ben Parker and Mary Reilly, aka Uncle Ben and Aunt May. So it's going to be really interesting to see how his story unfolds. Thing is that most people know Ben Reilly because in General 616, if you will, he's also known as the Scarlet Spider, who's very popular because he's the original Spider-Man that had the hoodie.
Okay.
The blue hoodie look. Yeah. So, yeah, very, very curious how that's going to pan out. There's still no definitive release date, but it's still set to arrive in 2026. And the first two episodes are going to be directed by Harry Bradbeer. And it's also produced by Spider-Verse veterans Phil Lord, Christopher Miller, and Amy Pascal. So... high hopes,
yeah.
A decent bar, and again, I love Spider-Noir, so I'm kind of excited. I just hope they don't mess it up.
We'll see. Yeah, you can only hope.
I know. And then CCXP, or Comic-Con Experience, a convention that rotates through Brazil, Germany, and Mexico, just wrapped in Brazil last weekend, and footage from both Wonder Man and Daredevil Born Again Season 2 were shown. Nothing has surfaced. Nothing has leaked.
Like, love, and also like, damn, really? Yeah,
I know, I keep getting on my For You, like, someone's always complaining, like, really? None of y'all got it?
Something.
Yeah, nope, nothing has surfaced. But things are obviously ramping up, because related but not related... Sebastian Stan and other celebrities attended Tokyo Comic Con, also held last weekend, and he alluded that people might not be surviving Doomsday. That's what they all do. They all say, like, we'll see who makes it out. But he also said he wanted fans to rally and help them make another Thunderbolts film. So it's like, so Bucky isn't dying? Basically what people said. And so it's turning into that game of like, okay, we're hearing all these rumors and such. But... related to Wonder Man, if you haven't yet, be sure to text ACT, aka ACT, to 805-887-3867 to hear from Trevor Slattery himself. Have you done this?
No, I didn't.
It's
funny.
Because it's quite literally Sir Ben Kingsley, and he's like, hello, this is Trevor Slattery with your latest acting tip. And he just gives you
just
like
a random, random tip.
Yeah, it's incredible. And their audio, it's audio. There was a
love that
the first thing was a video that they released online, so you can see it online. But the all the subsequent messages have been audio. It's like getting a voicemail from him. It's freaking hilarious.
That is great.
But yeah, nothing else has popped up. And so, assuming that all the marketing dollars here on out for the next month, aside the Doomsday stuff, is going to be Wonder Man. So maybe that's the problem, is that they're like, okay, well, we have the Doomsday trailer about to drop. And then Wonder Man comes
it's gonna
out.
It's going
to
drop soon. And
well, yeah, it has to drop 17th or sooner.
It's definitely going to drop. Well, it's obviously going to drop after this recorded episode. Of course, we're not recording any more episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's going to be like, wow, you guys suck.
Because it's before Avatar, Fire, and Ash. So
does that come out this weekend?
That comes out on the 17th, 18th.
Oh, next weekend.
So the trailer is ready. It's popped up on a lot of sites of like reporting of like, oh, the trailer is being fed through the system now. And so it's confirmed at a minute and 25 seconds. So, after this episode drops, it'll probably be a few more days. Next week is basically when we're supposed to see this trailer.
Yeah.
Officially. Yeah, so... woo! Brace yourselves, y'all. And then, departure from all of that, the Critics' Choice Awards nominees have been finalized, and Marvel scored some. Marvel Zombies made the list for Best Animated Series, so did Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Fantastic Four, First Steps, got Best Production Design... but they were all the projects were snubbed as far as like Golden Globes were concerned, and Thunderbolts did not get anything that they were shooting for, which is very interesting because the Academy posted a scene from the film the other day.
Oh, did they?
And everyone, I looked at the comments because they got ratioed hard, and everyone was like, you're posting about this movie?
Yeah.
Very skeptical, but in a good way. So, yeah, who knows? But award season is coming, and I guess Marvel's going to have a couple in the bank, but that's about it. Marvel's really hell-bent on keeping their record as highest-grossing film ever. So, I know when this popped up, I was like, wow, really? Avengers Endgame will officially be returning to theaters September 25th, 2026.
Wonder why.
Because they want to bleed it into Doomsday.
I know.
It's just so interesting. I'm like, oh, okay. But it's like, it's the same reason why did Sony release all this amazing Spider-Mans and Toby Spider-Mans?
If you can just squeeze a little bit more money, they're sure.
Squeezing that lemon. So it returns to theater September 25th. And so the official timeline as it stands is the Doomsday trailer will release sometime December 16, 17, 18. And then Secret Wars begins filming in spring 2026. Endgame returns to theaters in fall 2026. And then Doomsday finally drops winter 2026 on December 18th. So they're just basically, they're slicing that bread up perfectly in quarters. So
yeah,
that They're just hitting us with waves. So yeah, it's good marketing. They fumbled this last couple of years, so they got to get back on track. Sounds about right.
Yeah, something's going to happen.
Yep, it better be good. So we'll see. All that said, it's finally time to dive into this episode's character study. But first, a reminder. We are not experts. We don't claim to be. We're just a couple of nerds nerding out. And in this episode, we're nerding out about... Say it, Jeff.
Thanos!
I didn't expect that one. I expected the... Thanos. Or like Zoe Saldana says, Thanos. Thanos. She says it incorrectly all the time. Thanos. And so related episodes, Jeff and I were talking about this before recording, and we have quite literally talked about this character so many times, we thought we did this episode already. But he appears in at least eight. At least eight. But for your information, episode 16, all about the Eternals, 55 about Gamora, and 95 about Death are the ones to hit. Then there are a couple after that. So bounce around. You'll hear a lot of it overlapping, but... When it comes to Thanos himself, he was created by, here's a name we haven't heard in a minute, Jim Starlin and Mike Frederick. And so the first appearance you have seen already, Jeff, because he shares it with another character. And so let's cover the cost. So this is Invincible Iron Man at number 55, which was published in 1973. What do you think? What do you think for cover price?
The '70s always get me.
Yeah.
It was a psychedelic time.
Psychedelic time. The publishing company is about 10 years old as Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
15?
Oh, almost there.
It's up, huh?
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's a quarter?
Nah, 20.
20?
20.
Oh,
so,
God.
Yeah, interestingly enough, Thanos' first appearance doesn't even involve Thanos on the cover. It's Drax. It's Iron Man and it's the Blood Brothers, but no Thanos in sight yet. It is his first technical first appearance. And so the issue itself is called Beware the Blood Brothers. And its notable attributes are first appearance of not only Thanos, but the Blood Brothers, Mentor, Kronos, Star Fox, and Drax, all in this issue. So previously, we discussed this in early 2024, and I wanted to compare and contrast, like, has the price changed?
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time we've actually been able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so originally, the highest that was listed for this comic was a CGC 9.6 for $5,000. Now you can get a 9.4 for $2,800. It is cut in half. Whereas the lowest was a CGC 3.0 for $425. Meanwhile, now you can get a 5.0 for $5.25. That kind of tracks.
Oh, wow.
It makes
sense.
So a well-graded version of this book is now cheaper than it used to be just a year ago.
That's crazy.
Which is very interesting. Yeah, I don't know if that's inflation or people are just like, it's fine, just take the book.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's changed a little bit. And the fair market value, very interesting, because originally it was around $2,800 to $3,800. Now it's only $1,500 to $2,000. So even that's dropped. People are just trying to get rid of the book.
Yeah.
And it's a good time to buy it. So if you love this character or any of the characters mentioned, it's a good time to buy the book. And then raw, you can get it for about $250 to $600, depending on if you trust this person. I saw a couple on eBay. I was like, oh, look kind of rough, but you could get a bargain if you really have a good eye for it. So, first exposure to this character.
Yeah, I mean, that first tease of him.
Yeah.
Was that
Avengers?
Avengers. Yeah. The first Avengers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it? That was.
I think so, yeah. I have it in my notes here.
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, when he was pink.
He was, yeah, he was like fuchsia.
Fuchsia.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, yeah, that was the first Avengers.
2012.
If
you think about how long.
Wow.
Yes.
13 years ago.
Yes. Yes. The look of skepticism is
oh my God. Ew.
Yeah.
Gross. Isn't 2012 and I was a senior in high school.
That's, you put it in that perspective and
I know.
Like, whoa.
You know what? Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So you were in high school when you were like, who the hell is that?
And who's this pink guy?
Yeah.
And it's just like a, he's like, it's like a side profile shot
of
him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that as we get to MCU. That's crazy. How interesting. So you've never been, that's interesting. So what was your thought when he, when they just showed that flicker of him and he just goes,
I was like, who the fuck is this guy?
It's funny because it, you know, like I was in true tradition. I was at the El Capitan watching Avengers in that theater when that happened. And so the super fans were all there and it was like a crazy time because it was still fresh, right? It was still year one or, you know, whatever you want to call it or refer to it as. But the crowd went insane.
Really?
Absolutely. And they're like, whoa!
Okay.
Like, it was intense how crazy people reacted to that because it, and it was only 2 seconds. It was literally two seconds. Wow, that must have been so interesting. Because, yeah, you had zero contact.
Because I think I watched, now I think about it, I'm pretty sure I watched it with maybe like a couple high school friends. We watched it in theaters. Mm-hmm. We waited,
Yeah.
And I think at the time, it's probably still more now than me, but he knew the comics. Yeah. So he knew characters. And I think that's post-credit scene came up.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, who's that? And he's like, oh, dude, that's Thanos. And I was like, what? And I was like, yeah, like, that's Thanos. And I was like, yeah,
what does that mean?
I was like, all right.
Mm-hmm.
So he looked menacing.
Yeah.
So you I was like, let's just ride with it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. My story isn't nearly as interesting whatsoever. I can't pinpoint when Thanos was, when I first understood who Thanos was, and I think it's definitely most likely when I was like 10, 12 and the trading cards, because I had it, and it was right in the nugget of when Infinity Gauntlet came out, so that was the big comic on the shelves, and so I was barely able to absorb like who is this guy. And especially being somebody that was so X-Men oriented at the time, he was this big galactic dude, and the comic was instantly so expensive for a 10-year-old like me that I was just like, I don't know what to do. Like, I can't afford this comic book, so I guess I'm not going to read it until I'm older. And I did. And so, yeah, he was kind of rooted in there, like many of these characters were for me. But when it comes to our mini book, for your satisfaction, per usual, height. Is that a 6 or an 8? 6'7". I was like, is that an 8?
I was like, if it was 5, that'd be crazy.
Yeah. 6'7" at 985 pounds.
185?
985.
Oh, my God.
He's a big boy. He's a wide boy. Because 6'7 is tall.
What?
6'7.
Six. Wait, do you know this like social?
Yeah.
I was like,
6'7". Didn't they name like a sandwich or something after this?
I don't know.
It's that popular that now people are like, oh, there's a combo.
It's so stupid. Yeah. I refuse to say it.
Even the Grinch knows the joke. Somebody said it to him and he was like 8'9" or something. But yeah, so 6'7". He's 6'7", like the basketball players are. And 985 pounds. So
almost
tall and
almost
wide.
Half a ton. Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
He's tall and wide. And so for his bio, once a pacifist, Thanos' obsession with death has led him on a path of conquest throughout the cosmos, seeking the Infinity Gauntlet to wipe out half of all life in the universe and win death's favor. Thankfully, a coalition of heroes defeated Thanos, but he remains committed to succeeding where he has failed. Yeah, that's it.
I'm actually. I just pulled up the Avengers end credit scene.
Yeah.
With Thanos.
Yeah.
I didn't notice this.
Yes.
There's a shot of him where has his hand. It's a shot of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like a human ass hand. Like,
let me see.
You're gonna be like, I was like, is that? That's not.
God, I don't remember this at all. Oh, interesting.
But that looks like a human.
Well, here's the thing, and I don't know if you knew this, because I knew a little bit of the story, but not entirely. I wasn't going to get into it now, but the actor who portrayed Thanos in this sequence, it is practical. So he's in makeup. And so if the hand is looking human, it's probably his actual hand.
I mean, it's the fact that it also, it's like white. It's a white hand. Yeah. But then when he does the turn,
yeah,
it's he's a poipal. Pink face.
Yeah.
Fuchsia face.
Interesting. Well, yeah, because wow. You know what, I've noticed a lot on social lately too is people are revisiting Avengers, right? The hype is starting up again. And so people are revisiting the Avengers film itself and they're just like, man, this film is so good for not having a real director. It's kind of like, oh, I didn't realize that was the narrative. And so that kind of bleeds into that too. They didn't really have someone to like guide these, even the end credit scenes.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
Yeah. You look back on it now, it's like, oh yeah, 13 years later, 14 years later, looking back on it, holy Toledo. That brings us to comic book Thanos, so we can get right to it. And so I was telling Jeff, I was like, this feels foreboding and it's a lot, but we've talked about so much of this, but we're going to stick to his first appearance first, and then we'll talk about his origin throughout the rest of the episode, which seems common lately. Like, I feel like we've been doing that a lot lately, is that that's the whole point of this series and our podcast, is that we're uncovering things about the characters as we go along, not just here's the origin story and there's the movie version. But Thanos is especially interesting because he was inspired by Sigmund Freud's concept of the human death drive. So I was not familiar with this. This is, we're getting in the weeds with psychology and all of this stuff, you know. And so the death drive itself is simply to lead organic life back into the inanimate state. And the death drive is not only expressed through instinctive aggression, such as hunting for nourishment, but also pathological behavior, such as repetition, compulsion, and self-destructiveness.
Mm.
So Jim Starlin, when creating this character, he was in college and he conceived the idea of Thanos during his psychology classes, funny enough, based on these ideas by Freud. Mm-hmm. And so the name itself, he derived from Thanatos, which is the personification of death.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And it's, if you have any idea or you're familiar with Evangelion, Thanatos is also a big thing in their world as well. And so, yeah. So Thanatos, the personification of death. Thanos pulled it from there. He was like, all right, I'm cooking. Here we go. And so it was very interesting because, again, Starlin did this in college. And so he was still very early in his comic book career. He was kind of like doing things for the publication, but he wasn't a big name that he is now, obviously. Okay. And so the story is that he was approached about creating a villain to help supplement these upcoming issues of Iron Man. Starlin was like, this might be my only shot. Let's go big or go home. And then he created Thanos. That's wow. The rest
that is
history.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible. And so while we'll discuss his origins again, what I think is really funny about Thanos is that he was even told, like, originally his concept for Thanos was that he was gaunt and he was thin and kind of like unsuspecting almost.
Mm-hmm.
But the publishers and the editors working with him at the time were like, look, if you're gonna copy anything from DC, because Jack Kirby was cooking over at DC at this point.
Yeah.
They were like, why don't you borrow the concept of Darkseid, like Superman's Darkseid?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, okay. So there are similarities between Darkseid.
Man, yeah, I see it.
And Thanos. Yeah, exactly. And it, apparently it's often mistaken that Darkseid was based off of Thanos, but it's the other way around. And they're not shy about it. They're like, we kind of copied him.
Okay.
But Thanos, I feel, is like a, I don't know. I don't know enough about Darkseid to like do the comparison.
I mean, in terms of like on screen, there's definitely similarities.
Especially
in the Justice League.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely see it. But they were both on to good stuff. And, you know, it's hard to combat with something like Jack Kirby, that's something that Jack Kirby's created.
Yeah.
As for this first appearance, again, it's a Invincible Iron Man issue, which is already like, okay, that's interesting because he's not a cosmic character, but it's issue 55. Tony's been Iron Man for a while now, and his rogues gallery basically was a broad spectrum of different character types, including these blood brothers, and they were sent by Thanos because by now the lore of these superpowered mightiest heroes of Earth, the Avengers, has already reached the cosmos. Now all the cosmic villains are coming to them, which is, okay, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, this is also the first appearance of Drax, who we discussed way back in episode 74. And so it's interesting because Drax is sending out this distress signal, essentially, to Tony Stark, of all people, being like, Thanos is coming, Thanos is coming. In the middle of the issue, that's when things finally start to shift focus from the other characters to Thanos's origin. And it starts very clearly, and I think we said this in our Drax episode, quote unquote, the Titans, a people of ever advancing science, art, and beauty, and ruled by wise mentor and his sons, Eros and Thanos. It's very, very curious because at the time they were all depicted as purple, the three of them. And so this is before the true origin story, as I mentioned, before they actually came up with the fact that, oh, he's deformed. He's basically deformed.
Yeah.
So originally they were all purple people. They all had the great wooded nut sections, as Star-Lord has so perfectly articulated in the films.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so they all looked like that initially, but it's been changed in continuity after the fact. So like if you were to see this in an actual print, they might actually be flesh colored now. But anyway, and so it all seems that, you know, things were peaceful and tranquil on Titan where they came from until Thanos took it upon himself to create weapons. And so we've talked about this in the Eternals episode where Titan is basically perceived and depicted as this very peaceful, beautiful, perfect utopia.
Yeah.
And then Thanos just one day was like, I think we would be good to have guns and weapons.
You know? Sure.
Yeah. And so this concept, he introduced conflict and suffering and pain to this world that didn't know it. They just didn't know what that was.
Sounds about right.
They were like, Madman. And he was exiled. Titan. Yeah. And that's how he got his title of Mad Titan. And so they exiled him. They sent him away from Titan, the planet itself. And they basically dubbed him a poisoner of the perfect world. And so it's that very moment that Thanos vowed vengeance on all who opposed him. And so he started going through the galaxies, collecting people like him that just did not, and they're not even people, but alien races and species that wanted destruction and wanted to dominate others.
Yeah.
But of course, he was smart in choosing people that wouldn't override him. So he's growing this army of lowlifes while he's the main ruler and the Mad Titan, capital. And so he would then, you know, use this army to do his bidding. And then once that conquest truly began, the Eternal Kronos then created Drax to seek out Thanos and become the destroyer. So that was his only purpose.
Ah.
So those two are very much connected. We're not going to talk about Drax independently because we already did an episode about it. But that's the whole purpose of why he became Drax. It was the only to kill Thanos. That's it.
Yep.
That's it. And so he became the destroyer. This great battle ensued and Drax failed. And so then, after they catch up with the story, it then turns into present tense where Thanos is taking on Iron Man with the Blood Brothers as well as Drax in the background. The Blood Brothers successfully captured Iron Man and brought him to the same fortress where Thanos and Drax are. That's when the whole thing goes kaboom. And in true comic book fashion, they all duked it out. But the plot twist was, at the end of the issue, you know, I think it's Iron Man, or maybe it's Drax, gives a solid right hook to Thanos or left hook to Thanos, and his head just bursts and it's a robot. So at some point, Thanos switched places with a robot version of himself after threatening to blow up the entire fortress itself.
As one does.
Yes. And so, you know, it's the end of the issue. He retreated and he went to go fight another day as per frickin' usual. So it was like, not this time, Iron Man. Ha ha ha. And then he gets away. Like they all do. They all did it. And so he doesn't return until a few issues later, but that's like it. That's his first appearance.
Yeah.
And it's so incredible because in recollection, they do present him as this very foreboding type. Right, he's in a chair, he's slumped over, he's dark and broody, but they just kind of side quested him. He was like, oh, there's also this guy named Thanos, he's coming, he's a new villain. But they don't really they don't really expand on him until much later.
Yeah.
And they really lean into, oh no, he's gonna destroy the universe.
Yeah, he don't care.
He don't care. It's very interesting how his story unravels over time. Which brings us to Thanos in live action, portrayed by Josh Brolin. Like I mentioned before, the character first appeared in 2012's Avengers mid-credit scene where he was portrayed by Damien Poitier. Again, he was practical, so it was real makeup,
yeah.
Contact lenses, probably shot
prosthetic
in a
face,
day.
Yeah,
all prosthetics, yeah. Very interesting. And so at some point they deviated and they thought, you know what? We might have something here with this Thanos character.
I know. I wonder what it was. Whose idea was it to have that as a mid-credit scene?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And then to be like, oh, people like it?
People
all right,
like
cool.
It,
let's keep going.
Let's actually do it.
And
yeah.
It was like the best freaking thing you could probably
do. I'm sure it certainly had something to do with Kevin Feige and James Gunn, because James was taken on Guardians of the Galaxy almost immediately after.
Yeah.
And so they realized, oh, we could go pretty far with this if we really, really want to.
Yeah.
But as for Thanos in the MCU, yeah, he's been nothing but foreboding and scary and omnipotent. That cameo in what film was it? In Guardians? Was it Guardians where he's like, fine, I'll do it myself?
I think that is the end of Guardians.
Yeah, Guardians 1 or 2.
Volume 1 for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so by then it was already Josh Brolin in the mocap.
Yes.
And so Thanos had always come across as the premier villain that would absolutely destroy the MCU. That minute on, he was like, oh yeah, it's over. It's over. And he did. He did. He succeeded in doing exactly that. We don't get much as far as his origin goes beyond what he shares in Infinity War. But yeah, same thing as the comic. Titan was a once peaceful, beautiful planet, and it was steadily heading towards societal cataclysm.
Yes.
And overpopulation, saturated with need over resources. Is your Josh Brolin voice ready?
Oh my God. That is so hard.
Your Kingpin voice is number one,
I don't know if I can even go that bravado.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. It's so hard because I have a quote. I have a quote from him on the sidebar there. What he tells Doctor Strange about his planet.
That is a good.
Can you
it was. I can't. I think
it's
my favorite.
So
my favorite line that I do is the. You cannot live with your own. Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I know which one you're talking about.
And then what did that lead you back to me?
Yeah.
No, I can't even get that grandiose.
He's so unique with his voice.
Yeah, I can't even.
Yeah, and so Thanos says to Doctor Strange in Infinity War. It was beautiful.
Yep.
Titan was, like most planets, too many mouths, not enough to go around. And when we faced extinction, I offered a solution.
Genocide.
Genocide, basically. Yeah, and his grand solution was to eradicate half the population in favor of the planet's finite sources. That, like the comic, ensured that he was cast out and labeled a madman. And unfortunately, Titan fell because Thanos was right. As Hawkeye's mug suggests, Thanos was right. And so he was right.
Need
he,
one.
He was
100%. Need one of those.
No, I don't think they still sell the official one, but I'm sure you can get it somewhere. Too funny. But yeah, then and there.
That's crazy.
That's the part where the whole conquest for balance begins, and then the whole act of vengeance really unfurls for Thanos, because he then took it upon himself to believe that he could absolve the galaxy from destruction by killing half of it.
Yeah, what was the line? It's like, so the other, like, kill half, or whatever half, so the other half could thrive.
Mm-hmm.
You've shown me that's not possible.
Yeah.
So I will break down this planet to the tiniest atom and rebuild.
Look at you.
And rebuild a new universe.
Yeah.
Born out of blood.
Yeah.
They won't know. You'll be too dead to something.
Yeah, something like that. Something epic. Something epic. Yeah, absolutely. That it's all present in his dialogue.
Yeah.
What has happened.
Crazy.
And yeah, it's so it's even crazy to look back at now, because again, it was the first time these heroes truly lost.
Yeah.
Like, characters have died and they've always come up victorious, right?
Yes.
And so this was the first time they died, and being in theaters when this happened and the reactions people had was so incredible. Nothing like it. I'll tell you something. Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2 comes really close. Because I'm sure you've seen one of those reaction videos here or there. But there, it's there's this whole thing where they had a facade scenario where everybody died. Everybody. But it was a cop-out, and it happens in the books as well. But it wasn't this level of intense, obviously. because Twilight's Twilight. You can't take it seriously. but yeah, it was an incredible moment. And so being able to see Endgame again in theaters is going to be pretty
It definitely
awesome.
Was. Yeah, I'll never forget it. I'll think probably the last movie I watched twice in theaters.
Wow.
I think so.
Really? Oh, because that's rare for you. Yeah, because you don't do that. Because
I feel like I have good like movie retention. Like I'm pretty, it's so funny. Like I could be watching something for the first time with Sam.
Yeah.
But and then just me being from Phil Scott, I can pick up on like, maybe a line or something that sets up. And I'm like, oh, because this happened. Me and Sam will be watching something for the first time. And then she'll be like, oh my God, what does that mean? And I was like, I don't know yet. Like, we're watching this for the first time together.
Yeah. My sister does that. Jumps ahead and is like, wait. Just stick with it.
Yeah, and we'll pause. I was like, no. keep watching. Like, you'll figure it out. Just
So it's going to be interesting because I think I did watch the double feature or something the last time it was in theaters.
From
Infinity War to Endgame? And Endgame, yeah. And it's incredible to actually watch it back to back on a large format like that. Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. So I hope they do that too, and I'm sure they will. And the rumor is that they're going to pour all their marketing dollars into this movie, which they have to. They have to. Like, they can't after this past phase or two. They need something solid. And so it will be very interesting to see what they do. But as far as Thanos goes in the MCU, is he the perfect villain? Like, could they have done anything different? I think it's so solid. Like, couldn't have asked for a better outcome.
I think
so, because
I think, especially during that time, I think he was the first villain, at least in, like, this is, I don't know if it's, like, recency bias or just, like, what I at the time could think of, because what? Endgame came out, or Infinity War, Endgame came out 2018, 2019?
2017, 18.
Was it really?
I think so, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Whoa, okay. Yeah. Whoa. But so at the time, like, especially comic book movies, it's pretty much only Marvel. Villains weren't the greatest.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, you're right, 2018, 19.
Oh, thank God. Woo!
I had to check. I was like, no. I went into that too confident.
I think in terms of Marvel villains, especially at that time, if you think about like the movies like leading up of like Thor, is that Thor Dark World? You know, like leading up, I know we've talked about this before, of like we rewatched movies like oh, it wasn't that bad, but leading up to it in that time, it's like this villain in this movie wasn't that great, whether it was Thor Dark World or...
Still not that bad in Rock Faction.
What's another one that was like not critically acclaimed? Another villain that was like, kind of weak. Caecilius, maybe?
I guess so, but that he was still so... Doctor
he was
Strange
still very
is a
powerful,
movie.
But in terms of just like agreeing with a villain...
Caecilius himself was forgettable for people. Yes. Even though the movie is
exactly. I think Thanos was the first... time literally funny enough half people and we're like, you know what, he's got a point.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the idea that, you know, with Black Panther, right? And that, oh, you know, look, well, he wasn't wrong. Killmonger wasn't wrong necessarily, right?
He just
had a method about it that
was the wrong way of executing
way of doing
a plan.
But with Thanos, it was like, well, he's not wrong and he's doing it right. Kinda. Getting rid of half the
genocide
population.
Is a good way. I don't think it is, but
random,
I mean,
but it's even not even genocide, right? Because he's killing only half of a species.
He's killing half of every living thing.
But every living thing, yeah. And
every
so
like bugs and plants. Exactly. Like,
oh man, yeah. He was incredible. So I am glad that they haven't gone back to taint how perfect that scenario was.
Yeah.
Whether or not they will in some capacity moving forward remains to be seen. But I mean, yeah, I understand why people are so fixated on, oh, it's sucked ever since. And it's like, okay, no, you're incorrect. But yeah. That was such a momentous pair of movies and such an incredible phase.
Yeah.
I can see why you would say that.
Yeah,
you
know, it's also just like the lead up and the setup. Yeah. Of course. Like,
the entire thing wasn't flawless by any means, but it was so well constructed.
Yeah.
It's hard to be like, nah.
Yeah, and people were invested. Great. And like that's super. Like another thing. And then I mean, we can get into it of like we talked about it before of like how they push too much stuff
post
COVID.
Strikes and COVID. Just ruined a lot of things.
But yeah.
Yeah. And so there's so many variables in the mix that people don't remember. And so, yeah, it's unfortunate because they forget that things happened in real life. People were dying in real life. Like, it wasn't going to be perfect, but it was the end of a specific type of era. And I think that, we could see it again with what's coming with Doomsday.
I mean, we've seen Thanos come up once again, and that was in live action, not in, like, animated. Mm-hmm. But it was in Multiverse of Madness, right? We just saw him dead. We didn't see him like
correct.
He was just dead on the other planet.
Yeah. With the scythe through his back, yes. I think. Yeah.
Through his chest.
Through his chest. Yeah. Incredible.
That's about it.
Yeah, that's it. We haven't seen him since. But
yeah.
I don't think that's the last time we'll see him though. So, speaking of seeing him, the aesthetic, as far as Thanos' aesthetic goes, it's pretty solid. It's probably one of the better versions of the character comic to live action that we've seen. Even though he is mocap, Ryan Meinerding, of course, head of visual development at Marvel Studios, is the one to thank for Thanos' final look in the MCU. And so, again, he wasn't responsible for the Avengers look necessarily, but from Guardians onward, it's all Ryan Meinerding, and that's why he's head of Viz Dev now. You know, like, this is what got him there. And so, yeah, you can see the armor, the detailing, the coloration is pretty identical and realistic versions of the comic book version. And even in the comic, he like looks a little derpy because he's got like the diaper thing going on.
Sure.
But the gold, the armor, it's very frame for frame. It's on it.
Yeah.
It just looks like a real version of him.
The most menacing, in my opinion, that Thanos has looked in the MCU is when he beat up Hulk.
Oh, yeah. The scariest.
Yeah. I was like.
You felt that. I watched that in 4DX. I watched it in 4DX. I'm a fool. Holy crap.
The seer seeing. Oh.
Dude.
Oh.
And so I felt it. And it was actually incredible. I regret it. I would never do it again.
Yeah, that's
But like to
insane.
Experience. I swear to you, my chair did not stop jostling that entire movie. Especially near the end when they're all just fighting. Oh my gosh. It's like, woo.
Thanos is coming.
Yeah. It was incredible. Yeah. But yeah, he's so cool looking, and I can't even imagine the amount of man hours.
Oh, I know.
And rendering it took to make him look
I
like
watched,
that.
Yeah, I watched these guys on YouTube, Corridor Digital, at the time, like when Endgame was big and everything, they were dissecting like Thanos's VFX because he's also one of the few that we're going to have to get a close up on.
Yeah.
So that scene of on Titan when they take over his mind to try to get the glove off and there's a close up of his face.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, you can see like the pores. Fibers, the pores of his hair, like the skin.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa.
It's intense.
Like they really
had
to focus.
He's absolutely incredible. Yeah, I can't think of a better CGI character.
You feel his gargantuanness,
the presence,
like how big
is
he
there.
Is.
Yeah. And also again to Josh Brolin's like favor,
and then
his
you
voice
add,
is incredible.
And then you add Josh Brolin's voice.
Exactly. On top of that.
Yeah.
It's they really succeeded. They really did something incredible with him. Again, he had practical makeup in the first version. Yeah. And then it elevated and escalated to a fully CGI motion captured version, which was all done by Josh Brolin, which is funny because when you see the pictures and he's got the Thanos head floating literally 2 feet above his own head.
Yeah.
More kudos to these actors for being able to pull it off because, yeah, they made it look quote unquote authentic when you're watching the film. And to your point, you see him fighting the Hulk and you're like, oh, that's a warrior right there.
Yeah,
he can really fight.
Yeah.
Speaking of fighting, Thanos' power and his paraphernalia, because there is a certain something he uses for sure. But by far, Thanos has some of the most complex characteristics when it comes to powers, largely connected to the cosmos and threaded by his mutated eternal roots. So the idea of Thanos is that he cannot be changed or made or unmade from who he innately is. Mm. He is an unchangeable being in the universe, which is rare. Once he has his goal, which is destruction, death, domination, it's over. That's all he is. That's all he'll ever be.
Got it.
And so it's noted that he has true autonomy of himself beyond other beings, which makes him exceptionally unique, and which is why he thinks the way he does. And so his obsession with the cosmos has also empowered him with heightened awareness of all that exists in the universe, though he's far more connected with those who have intersected with both him and the Infinity Gems.
Wow.
Yeah. So, again, intrinsically
he's
connected.
Obsessed with those things.
Yes, they are part of him. They are simply, it's just fate. It's destiny. And so from a physical standpoint, Thanos' mutation has enabled him with brute physical strength, capable of synthesizing cosmic energy at will. And so that said, he's empowered with immense strength, superhuman agility, reflexes, stamina, speed, nigh invulnerability, retroactive immortality with regenerative healing factor.
Of course.
Force field manipulation, energy manipulation and projection, power amplification, psionic ability. So he has immunity to the psionic powers if he's familiar with the person. And he's also invulnerable to most forms of it. And then he also has matter manipulation, self-sustenance, and even teleportation thanks to his little hover chair.
Sure.
So if he's like, I gotta be somewhere, boop, zap, he's gone. Yeah. very Charles Xavier-like. He also bears superior scientific knowledge, using it in conjunction with powers of mysticism, and of course, his cybernetic enhancements, which is what a lot of the Hulk bashing is attributed to. And so as for paraphernalia, the gauntlet itself, it's heralded as one of the most powerful objects in the universe, designed to harbor the 6 Infinity Gems and the powers that come with. And so the gauntlet itself it's not singular like someone like America Chavez. It exists in multiple verses as different things, not different things, but it exists in multiple verses. It has appeared in over 15 multiverses in comic continuity. None of them are good. Like, it always leads to something terrible.
Okay.
And this is including like Marvel Hot Wheels verse or something. it's omnipresent in basically every universe, but featured in 15. And so over on the live action side, Titan physiology, which entails superhuman strength, durability, speed, agility, stamina, reflexes, regenerative healing factor, and longevity, is pretty much at play there. It's not as deeply involved as the comic books for obvious reasons, because they've had decades to make that Thanos.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, live action, we got him and he was done. You know what I mean? And we didn't get, again, we didn't get a lot of his backstory leading up to him becoming the Mad Titan.
Yeah.
But, of course, we have seen the power he wielded with the Infinity Gauntlet and the stones, immeasurable beyond belief, augmenting reality, stopping time, the whole shebang. And so in the MCU, we saw the forging of the gauntlet itself, which is not something like I expected to see in live action. Like, that's like another little piece we kind of got a flicker of, but even then, it's still a little bit. They're building his story in the MCU. When Thanos went to
Nidavellir,
I can't say it right. I can't say it normally. I have to say
Nidavellir.
Nidavellir. I did this in another episode.
Nidavellir. So,
when we saw the forging of the gauntlet itself created on the distant star known as Nidavellir, where he forced the dwarves upon it to create the gauntlet, that's the real first time we see him slaughtering a full species of of beings. And unfortunately, what was his name? That one, the dwarf. The one dwarf survived.
Peter Dinklage.
So he was the only survivor of that genocide, as you said. So presumably, in the MCU, the gauntlet disappeared after Tony's snap, along with the rest of Thanos. So we hope. But we don't know for sure. Mm. But that's pretty much what happened, right?
Yeah.
I had to think about it for a minute. I was like,
I mean,
right? Because Thanos had it on still.
The gauntlet?
His gauntlet. The golden gauntlet.
Oh.
The Nidavellir gauntlet.
Oh, well, it got dusted.
Right? So it's gone.
It's gone.
Okay.
It's gone.
And as long as it's gone.
So is Tony. It is gone.
Oh! Got him. So that all leads us to family, friends, and affiliations. So this is where we're going to get the meat of Thanos and his origin. And so it all began with his parents, Alars and Susan. I'm going to presume it's Susan, but they spell it Suisan.
Suisan?
We said Suisan in the Eternals episode, but I feel like it's Susan. There's
Matt, if it could be.
Like, it's like Icarus.
Exactly. I still my proudest quiz question
today. It's the funniest thing. Oh my God. Probably the funniest thing. The funniest assumption you ever made, and it was dead on. So Alars himself, he was an exiled Eternal of Earth who called the ruins of a colony called Titan his home. There, he met Suisan, who'd been banished from her homeworld for acts of heresy. And the two eventually fell in love, eventually hoping to repopulate Titan and create this colony of people, of new, like they called it Titan 2, and mm-hmm. they wanted to make a new life for themselves. And so they succeeded. They were blessed with the birth of Thanos. They considered him the embodiment of death. They were like, oh, we can triumph over even death. And so that's why they decided to name him Thanos.
Sure.
And we previously discussed these two in our Eternals episode again, but I do have a quote from Wikipedia that very much summarizes it in a nice little condensed way. And it's that Thanos was born on Saturn's moon Titan as the son of Eternals Alars and Suisan. His brother is Eros of Titan. Thanos carries the deviance gene and as such shares the physical appearance of the Eternals' cousin race. Shocked by his appearance and the belief that he would destroy all of life in the universe, Suisan attempts to kill him, but she was stopped by Alars. And so there is actually a screenshot from one of the more modern comics of what happened. And so you see Suisan and Alars and Thanos being born, and she's so mortified by what the baby looks like. She attempts to kill him. She is then dubbed insane.
It's crazy.
Put away. She goes through all this stuff, comes back, and tries to kill him again. But she is then killed, which we're going to talk about shortly.
Oh, my God.
So from the get, Thanos was doomed. He was just doomed. There was nothing good about this baby. Oh, and speaking of the baby, would you like to see Thanos as a baby?
I'm curious.
Wouldn't you think he's beautiful?
Yeah, it's creepy.
It's quite creepy. It's quite literally a purple baby.
It'd be like, how?
With no eyes. Yeah.
Like, how is this possible?
And she was the first to see him. And so Alars was like, what's the matter? And she's like,
do you see this?
Exactly. My baby.
Come on.
And so it's no exaggeration that Suisan went crazy after giving birth to Thanos. And so, she was institutionalized. And eventually, she was deemed well enough to return home. And then Eros was born not long after. So they were like, oh, you're good again? Let's try to have another child. And she was like, okay. And she wasn't completely destroyed by Thanos. Yeah, but gave birth to Eros. All was well because Eros came out quite literally perfect. He looks like the Eternal that they were expecting. Mm. But even then, Suisan held deep resentment and hatred for her firstborn, so much so that an altercation with the then 12-year-old Thanos resulted in her death by his hand. P.S. He also killed Alars as well once upon a time. Learning, like, Alars was dying, and Thanos was dying as well. Two different reasons. He went to go find his father to help him not die.
Yeah.
Realizes, oh, you're dying too. And he's like, well, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and expedite the issue for you. And he kills his father by basically breaking him in half.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And with a fist through his torso, basically.
Of course.
Yeah, so he does not have a good relationship with his parents. They have since been resurrected for different reasons and different storylines, but you get the gist. He took care of them. Not even his parents are safe from his wrath. Which brings us to the previous conversation we had regarding Eternals and Deviants, which in short are angels and demons. So if you want a simplified version of it, it's basically the concept of balance.
Mm.
And so Eternals were known as Homo Immortalis, which is literally immortal man in Latin. And similarly in X-Men lore, the mutants were referred to as Homo Superior, which is superior human. Deviants, on the other hand, are known as the Changing People, Mongrels, Scrum, but primarily as Homo Descendus, lower humans.
Mm.
So Thanos was looked at as a lower human while his parents and brother are Homo Immortalis. So already he's already on the short stick. He's drawn the short stick. So as the tale goes, Celestial Gamnanon, the gatherer, gathered.
That's a friggin' mouthful. Celestial Gamnanon, the gatherer.
Gathered.
Yeah. He's Homo Erectus.
Homo
what
Erectus.
What a sentence.
It's crazy. I don't know what I was thinking when I wrote this, but. So this celestial then gathered Homo erectus and sent them to Zeron, the tester. So these are all celestials. These are all celestials we have not met yet in MCU. And so we've seen a couple of them.
I wonder when we're going to get to that point.
Well, if Eternals had been as successful as it was meant to be.
Should have been.
Exactly right. I agree. So does Chloe Zhao.
Would have done this the second film.
Exactly. Then we might have seen these characters, to be honest.
Because that's like a whole nother thing. Because in terms of Galactus and Celestials,
mm-hmm.
it's Celestials, right?
Mm-hmm.
Powerful?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
In the tier and hierarchy of cosmic beings, oh my God. It's like, imagine I don't know, Infinity Stones.
Yeah.
All the Infinity Stone powers and the gods are Gaia is definitely up there first. And then it's Death. And her equivalent, because we talked about her and her family as well. And then it goes to Celestials, and then it goes down, 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 down. But Galactus is in there. He's in that run, which is so crazy, because they're godlike.
Yes.
And there's so many of them that they're basically covering every corner of the galaxy in every version. They see all.
That they do.
Yes, they do. And we saw at the end of Eternals just how big they are compared to Earth.
They can literally fit a world
right
inside of their, between their fingers.
Because imagine, if you will, if Galactus can step into and onto New York.
Yes.
But a celestial, you can only see the eyes for as far as the horizon goes.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's that size scary. Difference is very scary. Yeah. So this celestial, Gamnanon, he gathered Homo erectus and sent them to Zeron. And Zeron tests the stability of genes and life form involved. So it's this whole function of we have to find perfect balance. We have to spread different species and races and life across the universe in a very scientific way. It's a machine of its own. And then Zeron then mutated them with an unstable genome, creating the deviants. So it's all a science experiment.
Mm.
They're just like, what if we do this? What will happen? And so it introduced deviants into the mix. And so another celestial by the name of Nazar, the calculator. I think we've seen Nazar the calculator in Eternals, actually.
Yeah.
Or was it? It might have been the Guardians of the Galaxy ride. The one in Florida.
Got it.
Because there's a celestial that's part of that. Yeah, I can't remember which one, but I think it might be him. He then sought balance by creating the Eternals. So again, it's all about finding balance.
Yeah.
They're all obsessed with balance. What's the good to the bad? What's the light to the dark? And so all these celestials were concocting their thing. And then that's kind of where Thanos kind of got it from. But he was just a little more corrupt than they are.
Mm.
And so unfortunately for Thanos, he was part of this mutated deviant species that was the opposite of what he was supposed to be, if you will.
Yeah.
Because his parents were Eternals. They were the perfect ones.
Mm-hmm.
So to have a mutated baby... And then, of course, they balanced their family by having Eros, the embodiment of love. So they learned, like, oh, maybe naming Thanos the embodiment of death isn't as good as we thought it would be. So they decided, oh, let's change it up.
Yeah.
Make it positive. Okay. And then they got the right child that they wanted. So deviants are just considered defects, mutated, not heavenly like their celestial counterparts. Pretty much the gist of it.
Oof.
And again, we don't get a lot of Thanos' origin, so we don't see Aelor Zasuisan in anything related to the MCU.
Yeah.
Not even mentioned. You kind of just imagine Thanos had always been that age, like not even a baby. Yeah, like you don't get anything. But it worked. It worked fine. Like you weren't too thirsty for any of the details. But speaking of family, there's also Eros. And so, again, despite the colossal failure that was Thanos' conception and birth, Aelor's and Suisan ultimately attempted to have this other child. And thus, Eros was born and perfect as they always intended. He's absolutely the most opposite of Thanos in every way. And his powers include the ability to psychically stimulate the brain's pleasure centers, enabling him to influence others' emotions. And the opposites don't stop there. Eros became a beacon in comparison, even joining the ranks of the Avengers to ensure his brother's conquests never succeeded. In comic canon, Eros and Thanos call an annual truce to meet and exchange gifts.
My gosh.
So they're like, I will destroy you, brother.
Yeah, I hate you.
I will ensure you do not destroy the universe, brother. And they're like, so you want to have coffee next week? You know what I mean?
As one does.
I got a gift for you. Is that cool? Yeah, so very interesting because over on MCU land, we have Eros portrayed by Harry Styles
in the Eternals
film. So when you learn of what his powers are, you're like, oh.
That makes sense.
It makes sense. Yeah, yeah. You wanted somebody. Ah, got it. So the stimuli is there. And so, again, he's also very, for lack of better phrasing, he's very sentry-like in what he looks like. You know, he's got this poison sort of presence to him where he's very superhero-esque. Yeah. But they have no crossover. They haven't had any crossover. I think Pip, played by the incredible Patton Oswalt, I think he mentions that he's Thanos' brother? Or am I mistaken? I don't remember.
Was it brother? Yeah.
Does he say it though?
Oh, no.
So
no.
They didn't say anything, right?
No, yeah. They never said anything, any relation to Thanos.
Okay, so yeah, so they quite, think. Right? I don't, it's been a minute since I've seen Eternals, I'll say that much. But yeah, they don't have any familial ties in the MCU, and as it is, some of the sources of like printed official Marvel Universe, you know, Cinematic Universe books and stuff, they've noted that Eros was adopted into the family, that he's not a blood relative of Thanos at all. So whether or not that's true, we don't know because we've never seen anything else.
Yeah.
Sadly. But yeah, we first and last saw Eros in the mid-credit scene for Eternals with Pip the Troll. And Patton Oswalt himself, he's been in like 6 MCU projects at this point.
I know, crazy.
It's crazy. That's so cool. Living the dream, my friend. But yeah, we don't get anything else as far as Thanos' family is concerned in the films, in live action. However, we do get children.
Oh, he says it.
He does say it. Thanos' brother, right?
It is the royal prince of Titan, brother of Thanos.
Yeah, I knew it. I was like, wait, they did mention it. And that's when everybody was like, because Thanos is already dead and buried by then, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, very interesting. So unfortunately, yeah, we don't get much more than that. And that's it. And will we ever get it again? I don't know. It's kind of hard to say with all the Eternals. Like, it'd be nice to see a couple of them, but I don't know. Eros would be awesome, though. There's more to it, but it depends how galactic they end up going in the next few phases. So as for children, Thanos is father, quote unquote, to many which have met their fate. But there are a couple worth noting, including, I think we talked about Rot in our death episode. So there's Rot. It's just Rot. R-O-T. And so Rot was created of the merged energy of both Thanos and Death, though Rot itself is nothing but an abstract being. It was a moving void of nothingness, and Rot began to grow as it consumed more throughout its journey through the cosmos. And so it turned out looking like it looked like a lug nut or something. You know, like it looks like a box. with two screws on the end. Uh-huh. Like, that's okay. It. And that's what it is. It's just this weird thing that consumes and grows. But it's nothing. This was like a time when Thanos had died and it just manifested out of nowhere. And so they call it his son, which is just so weird. Or it's child, his child. But he does have legitimate children, and one of them is Thane. And so on the complete opposite side of the spectrum of Rot is this child of Thanos, who is also part inhuman. So there was a battle Thanos and his minions had against inhumans. Mm-hmm. They pillaged and conquered this planet, or these people, and once all the dust settled, an inhuman woman came back and she was pregnant with Thanos' child. So yeah. She had this child. Thanos was off doing his thing. It's not like he cares. He's Thanos. And so the child was birthed, born, and grew. And Thanos didn't know his son. But it didn't stop him from seeking him out by the time that Thane was in his late teenage years. So by then, the word had gotten back to Thanos like, oh, I have a son. I'm going to go get him. And I might kill him. but I'm not sure.
As one does.
As one does. And so he intersected Thanos with the Inhumans once again. So much so that when Black Bolt and Thanos came toe-to-toe, Black Bolt then detonated the Terrigen Bomb. Are you familiar with
it?
They did this in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so in the comics, he set off this Terrigen Bomb, the bomb that would essentially awaken the latent inhuman genes within Earthers, ultimately exposing Thane in the process. Yeesh. So he was like, I'm looking for my son. And then Black Bolt's like, you'll never find him. Wait, I'm going to set this bomb off. And then sure. It exposed him. Yeah, and then he found him. And so Thane isn't exactly a hero, nor is he a definitive villain, but he's often dubbed as an anti-hero and sometimes villain. And thankfully, and unfortunately, his father is to thank for that. So he's floating around in the ether. I was reading Inhumans when all this went down. It was very interesting. It's a really very curious read, but it doesn't really amount to much after the fact. Like, he's still alive.
Okay.
He's out there. Thanos is like, whatever, it's fine. and so Rot and Thane both, no MCU counterparts. I don't think they're anything, especially Rot, I don't think they're anything that they're going to bring in. Thane is compelling to a degree, but I think it's just too much. They're past all that stuff.
Yeah.
But there is a group that they did focus on in the MCU that is very prominent in the comics, and that's the Black Order, otherwise known as the Children of Thanos, who aid the Titan in his conquests. So many have graced through the roster. So it turned into like, this is a cool group. Do you want to be in it? So it wasn't only like the obvious offenders, but he kind of had like a roster of people who would rotate into this group.
Yeah.
And so in the comics, it consisted of Corvus Glaive, the Challenger, Hela, Black Dwarf, Ebony Maw, Proxima Midnight, Supergiant, Black Swan, and Gamora.
Nice.
So the Challenger was basically the original Grandmaster before Ndui Gas. That's Jeff Goldblum's character.
Mm.
Supergiant was this mentally unstable omnipath and telepathic parasite. And then Black Swan came from a royal family beyond our galaxy. And she was like tasked, when she was part of the Black Order, she was tasked with like getting him Mjolnir. And like trying
to.
She failed. Yeah, but she failed.
Obviously.
But he just like didn't care at that point. He's like, it's fine. I don't need it. And so he had these like randos come in, but the ones that really mattered were Corvus Glaive, Black Dwarf, Ebony Maw, and Proxima Midnight. And so Hela, I know she's kind of the wild card on that list. Hela had her own reason for joining Thanos' alliance, even playing a major part in his resurrection once upon a time. But the Order may seem to be the most familiar with those who, you know, are familiar with the MCU, because they're the ones we saw in Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah.
And Ebony Maw was portrayed by Tom Von Lahr. Cole Obsidian, portrayed by Terry Notary. Proxima Midnight, voiced by Carrie Coon and portrayed by Monique Ganderton. And Corvus Glaive, portrayed by Michael Shaw. I just put scary and badass, to be quite honest, because they were, and they, the CGI that they used for them was just as incredible as Thanos's.
Yes.
Absolutely cool. And yeah, they serve the same purpose. They're not necessarily children, his children, at least as far as we know.
Just his followers.
They're his dedicated followers that want to do his bidding. But I don't know. I think I would believe a couple of them are his actual children.
Yeah. Wouldn't put it past them.
But he is not a blood thicker than water type of man. He's like, no, how dedicated are you to kill for me?
Yes.
Which brings us to the two most notable of his children, the first being Nebula. And so it's funny because I was recollecting this. I was like, Nebula's a cool character. I think they did a really good job about making her relevant.
Yes.
Because again, Guardians of the Galaxy in general has never been an outstanding best-selling story.
Yeah.
Until after the films. But Nebula, they really knocked it out of the park with her. But in the comics and in MCU, she's so consistent. We haven't even covered Nebula yet, but she's no character has resented their parent more than Nebula does Thanos.
It's true.
Yeah, and so she has always been that way, even since her very first appearance. And so, just like it's been implied in the MCU, Thanos essentially took it upon himself to enhance his children despite their successes and due to their shortcomings. And so Nebula was among one of the children who was abused the most and changed the most. And so she experienced the notable amount of alterations. So from the eye, from her skull to all this stuff, like she once had flowing black hair in the comics. She looked very different in the comics. And then eventually, slowly and steadily, Thanos began to replace her body with mechanics mm-hmm. and upgrade them like he did himself.
Yes.
And Gamora, for that matter. But unfortunately, Nebula, it's very obvious what he did to her. And so she hated him so much and she resented him so much after all this abuse over the years, despite doing his bidding, that during the Infinity Gauntlet event, Nebula was the one to thank for seizing the gauntlet from Thanos and she revived half the universe.
Ooh.
She's the one that did it in the comics. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like one of the few that has put on the gauntlet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. And so There and you know, again, with all this Avengers hype like coming to the surface again,
yeah.
I've seen the chatter and it resurfaced that there was this, I don't know if it was shared in a concept early on or a podcast or whatever, but there was apparently a draft of the film where Nebula got the gauntlet.
I think there was a concept art.
It was
for
concept,
sure,
yeah. And so it almost happened again in the films, but it's in the comics as far as anybody wants to know, and it's definitely a good read. It's kind of wild because she's crazy, but she also helped. But yeah, we haven't discussed Nebula yet, so hopefully we will sooner than later and get more into this story. But over on the live action side, Nebula, portrayed by Karen Gillan in the Guardians of the Galaxy films and specials. And so, same thing. From the get-go, we saw Nebula was a persistent aggravator in the name of Thanos,
mm-hmm.
black sheep of the family, and visibly tortured. She was a Lufamoid. It's like essentially the blue people. They call
Is that
like the
what
blue,
it's called?
Yeah, Lufamoid. Yeah, and so she too, like her sister, was abducted from her home planet simply to serve Thanos after he eradicated their kind. And so Nebula's missions were, again, also like Gamora's, and it was simply to seize the Infinity Stones. Though it kind of seemed like she was not really doing the job like Gamora was. She was like, I have to be better than Gamora. Like, she's very
brave. Oh!
Yeah. Clita! Yeah, so she had her missions, but she was definitely gunning more for Gamora than she was Thanos and his goals. But we got to see Nebula interact with Thanos early on, stemming straight from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. And you know, he really portrayed the foreboding nature because, again, we see even with his children, he's like, just do the job.
Yeah.
Like, just do it. I don't care. But they had some incredible interactions all the way through to Endgame. And so it was great. That whole thing is just great. It reminded me very, very quickly why I love Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Her arc throughout the whole MCU is solid. Really.
Yeah.
Really good.
So, so good. Especially all the way down to volume 3.
Yeah.
Like full arc.
Circle, pretty much.
And
yes.
Not many, if you think about it, not many characters get that. Especially one that's supposed to be a sub.
Yeah.
Which is, damn, like, props to James Gunn, man.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
a goodie. And so, similarly, my girl, Gamora, deadliest woman in the galaxy, as he affectionately calls her. So Gamora, she has her own fair share of hefty backstory. We've talked about her. You can go back and listen to it. But the short story is, as we know it from the MCU, Thanos adopted her for the sole purpose of killing for him.
Yeah.
And so again, episode 55, all about Gamora. But the high level points from that episode are, Gamora loathes Thanos despite having him to thank for her endurance and abilities. He made her the deadliest woman in the galaxy. She's proud of that, but he's also the reason she's the deadliest woman in the galaxy and she can't live a normal life, but now it's all she knows. And beyond that, she realized after meeting Warlock that Thanos' ambition and tyranny are on the wrong side of history. And it empowered her to go rogue and be better.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know, puts her in line with the Guardians of the Galaxy. But in recent comic continuity, that changed with the Infinity Wars event a few years back, where it focused on Gamora's quest for the Infinity Stones for herself. And so she in that storyline, it still kind of rocks me. It's only 6 issues long, I think. But she killed and beheaded Thanos and then adopted the namesake Requiem. Like, what a hard Requiem.
Nice.
Such a good name.
Nah, that's tough.
Yeah, and very tough. And so she unfortunately created this entire other world. It was called the Warp World. Basically, time folded on top of itself and it just ruined a lot of things.
Yeesh.
But thankfully, once she calmed down and she realized, like, oh, I'm over my head, things got right. She went back to the Guardians of the Galaxy and once again against Thanos. And over on the MCU side, Gamora, portrayed by Zoe Saldana in all the films and specials. And so, Gamora's fate at the hands of Thanos. It's no surprise to anyone who's kept up with the first 3 MCU phases. He threw her off a cliff and she died.
Rip. I was
so distraught. I can't even tell you.
I can imagine.
I was like, is she dead?
Like, no. She comes back.
I think I didn't even do that. To be honest, I think I started crying, but I was like softly, quietly crying. And I was just like, no.
Not me.
Yeah. I felt that. But Gamora herself was abducted at a young age from her home planet of Zen Huberi, and she was groomed to be a killer for Thanos, same as in the comic. I feel like it was a little softer in the MCU. They didn't depict it as harshly as they did in the comics. Mm-hmm. But yeah, same story. They kept pretty solid between Gamora and Nebula and their origin stories. And Gamora's own pursuit of the Power Stone is what aligned her path with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And thankfully, she had already been on the path of going rogue against Thanos. Like, she was already there when we first meet her, even though she's sent as, like, the deadliest woman, daughter of Thanos. She's already past it.
Yeah.
And she also had some incredible character growth, even beyond Endgame. And unlike Nebula in the MCU, we never got to see them interact until Infinity War, which is kind of crazy to think about. We don't see them interact until that film. Nebula got to, and we get to see him with other people.
Yeah.
But never Gamora. And so it made it more powerful, I think. And yeah, it's actually quite incredible. And that, of course, is moments before Gamora's untimely death and the seizure of the Mind Stone. So it made all of that more impactful, which is, I hate that they took away one of the best love stories in the entire MCU, but that's what made it so good, I think, is that you don't get it.
It's what you got to do.
It's what you got to do, and I think it's great. But yeah, we won't see those two interact again.
Ever.
So as far as love interests are concerned.
Sure.
There is only one.
Oh,
don't
yeah.
be foolish. It is only death and death alone. And so in the comics, death is very much a personification of the entity itself and identified as a cosmic being that is near omnipotent. And so since he was a child, Thanos was enamored with death and the concept of it, again, it's a testament to his namesake. It was embedded in that boy's genes.
Yes.
Like, it was, again, fated for him.
Sure.
It was his destiny.
Came out the womb looking like he wanted death.
Like, exactly. In all the ways. And so he was so enamored with death, the concept of it. And the more and more he thought of it, the more and more death herself coerced him into doing deeds for her.
Yeah.
And he wanted that attention and affection. So it balanced out. She was getting what she wanted. She was getting it from him. He liked that he was being rewarded for doing what he was doing. And it was basically like they both won. As Thanos grew, so did his love and affection and desire to make death happy. And thus, he killed more people.
Of course.
Just killing more. Make God. Happy wife, happy life.
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And so, it's no surprise that death would inspire everything he is, especially given his lore.
Yeah.
And lest we forget, death has also dabbled in romance with Deadpool. And it's such a departure.
That
from,
sounds hilarious.
It's so funny. It's so different from her dynamic with Thanos, because her goal is the same. She just wants more death. She wants more killing.
Yes.
But the way she acts with Wade versus Thanos is so different. Like, again, I call back to the Deadpool 2013 video game or whatever, where she's huge in it and she's so funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, with Thanos, it's really a conquest of like, no, we need to destroy lives so that I can be happy. And Thanos does it very, very willingly. And on the MCU side of death, as far as death is concerned on the MCU side, Rio Vidal, portrayed by Aubrey Plaza, first and last seen in Agatha All Along. And so, as we know, Rio Vidal has no comic book counterpart. We discussed this in the death episode. But in the series, in Agatha All Along, she emerged as the Green Witch, which in general terms refers to a witch that works with the elements. And so it was very interesting because she was definitely a red herring for the most part. And there were hints that she was death all along. And then when they finally revealed it, again, one of the greatest payoffs in the MCU, because we learned that, she's just not diabolical. She is actually death.
Yeah.
That capital D death. And and she ended up being Agatha's lover, who may or may not have fathered Nicholas Scratch in the MCU.
Mm.
And so we obviously don't see her interact with Thanos, whether or not there will be a flashback of some sort. But if you think about it, right, you think back to, his inspiration and the drive and the reason why he did what he did in Infinity War and Endgame, there's no death involved. Like, she is not involved in that conquest for him in the MCU, which I think makes it really interesting, because it's like, oh no, you just really believed in that.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, you just really want to kill people.
You just really want to kill people. Because in the comics, it's at least kind of funny. It's like, oh, you're down bad.
Yeah.
You're down real bad.
Yeah.
But in the MCU, it's like, oh, you really believe this idea. This is your ideation, and you want to destroy half the galaxy. Got it. Cool, bro. That's cool.
I think it would be cool to see them on screen together, though.
I know. I would love
for
something.
Whatever it's worth.
Yeah, like, even if it was like Rio and young Thanos and her just mentioning like, oh, wouldn't it be fun if you just killed these people?
Yeah.
I think I would really like to see that. And it doesn't have to be full scale Josh Brolin style. It can be something as simple as that. But yeah, I would like to see something, but again, it's just unfortunate timing. And I think what they have done with her in the MCU has been really great. So, notable adversaries. I kid you not, I was like, nope. I'm not gonna do it. I was like, I'm not gonna do it.
I mean,
yeah. It's literally everybody.
Well, it's like, I mean, even like with Doom, we, you know, there is notable, but
yeah, because
with
like
Thanos,
Reed
it's like I literally do not care about any
no,
of you.
He doesn't. He doesn't. Nobody.
Like the same reason why death is his only love interest.
Yeah, and the same reason why he killed both his parents. The same reason why he would kill his brother if he could. The same reason why he would kill his children if he had to.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't. There's nobody. He only cares about death, both figuratively and literally.
Yeah.
And And so we've confused ourselves for having done this episode because we've mentioned him so much because he's against everybody.
Literally. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Watch Endgame again.
Yeah, like. Exactly. Yeah. And of course, in the comics, he's more cosmic skewed. So he's not going to be like, I'm going after Jessica Jones. Like, he does...
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to destroy something, yes. Take over something.
Exactly.
Not just people.
Right, exactly. And so he does have a little more face time with those, like, Drax and Adam Warlock, Mentor, Star Fox, Galactus.
Galactus would be crazy.
Speaking of Galactus, in another multiverse, he decapitated Galactus. Crazy.
Nice.
I know. Like, oh, nice. Shoot. These are the kind of things that I want to see in Secret Wars. Like, just give me, like, a little, like, hey, montage of different things that are happening.
Maybe we're going to get that famous Doom Thanos panel.
Yeah.
In Doomsday.
Right.
We might.
Right.
We might.
He might pull out his skull and his spine.
Yeah.
Scorpion style.
I hope we do.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be sick. Yeah. So, yeah. Once upon a time, he even decapitated Galactus. And it's again, it's very cosmic. He's a high level, broad villain.
Yes.
Just not going to fight street level people.
Yeah. Do you imagine? Yeah. Like Daredevil. Daredevil against Thanos? Yeah.
Oh my
Screw
God.
It. Let's get really crazy.
He would give him vision just
it'd be
so
the
that
shortest,
he could take
it'd be
away.
The shortest movie you'd
oh
ever
my God.
Watch. Shortest fight you'd
oh
ever watch.
Oh my God, I know. Jeez, yeah. It
Won't
would be
see
incredible.
Him coming.
And, you know, as expected, Thanos tends to skew on the outer world, cosmic galactic characters. And the same stands for true for MCU, even given the events of Infinity War and Endgame. Like, you genuinely see this man come to Earth and he sees Captain America and he's just like, what are you?
Sure.
Like, you know, there are flies on his food, you know, which, you know, makes the films such a triumph because, yeah, they grounded a cosmic character in a way that was so monumental. You didn't question it. At all.
Yes.
Like, you weren't like, where's Galactus? Like, you're like, holy crap. Captain America's holding this man's fist up. And he's actually kind of winning until he doesn't. And then they all lose. And then they all die. Well, half of them. But anyway, they grounded Thanos to a point where it was believable that he was tangling with heroes like the Avengers. But he still came off larger than life. And then he expanded well beyond Earth's atmosphere in every way. Not just New York. So maybe we didn't get the galactic battle that people might have been expecting, but man, I mean, they still did one hell of a
I agree.
Sequel, man. That is just so good. And who's to say? That's what other media is for. Like, What If? We've seen him in What If? Didn't ruin anything. It was kind of cool. It's like, zombie Thanos? Okay, that's kind of neat. So it's cool to see him in the other iterations we have without it disrupting the original, if you will. So in other versions in other media, there was only one that I wanted to note in particular, and that is someone we have heard a little bit about from the last D23, and that is King Thanos. And so this character actually debuted in 2017 in the second volume of Thanos' solo title and was created by Donny Cates and Jeff Shaw. And so this is essentially an older version of the Titan that we're already familiar with. He's still power hungry, he's still powerful, and he's willing to sacrifice all to death eons from now. This is the Thanos that decapitated Galactus.
It makes sense.
So what's crazy about this is that he's essentially wiped out the universe by now. He did not stop. He kept killing planets, people, races, species, aliens, life forms, until there was almost nothing in the universe left. But he was still like, I need something to do.
Sure.
So that's what
happened.
Psychopath? I know, exactly. And so, yeah, even after decimating nearly the entire universe, he knew that he himself had to die to be with death. That which is the only thing he can't succeed in.
Yeah.
Isn't that ironic?
That's crazy.
So he even went as far as to attempt to have his younger self come to the future and kill him.
Jeez.
Did not succeed at all. And so King Thanos, however, is going to go beyond the comic panels and he's heading to Avengers Campus next year, I believe. And so there is this ride that has been in progress and in production for I would say 3 years by now. And I haven't been to California Adventure in a minute, but every time I go, more of that ride is being built and you can actually see it.
Yeah.
And so King Thanos is supposedly the big supervillain in the ride, which is going to be really cool, I think. And it is multiversal. The concept art has shown everybody from She-Hulk to Daredevil to the Avengers.
Super cool.
Yeah. And so it's going to be a multiversal ride. Very excited. And I'm sure that they're going to release more about it come spring or even before then. And I can't wait to ride it. And that brings us to Almost Was. I honestly didn't think I was going to find anything. I'll be honest. I was like, nah.
No way, right?
Josh Brolin. No, there was apparently quite a few people, including Ron Perlman, who is Hellboy, Ian McShane, Vin Diesel, I am Groot.
Sure.
Dominic Purcell. He was, what do you call it?
Oh, he's in Prison Break.
Dracula. Yeah. Dracula in Blade.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And in Prison Break. I know him from Prison Break.
Yeah, and Sam Rockwell were all apparently considered and or auditioned for the role. But ultimately, Josh Brolin's voice and presence is what earned him the role. Which I mean,
easily.
Easily.
Easily. Like, unanimous.
Even Vin Diesel, I'm like, you're already Groot, but it's his voice is not like Josh Brolin's voice.
No.
His is a voice of like eras, you know what I mean? Just incredible. Incredible. Like, I can't even watch. Even in Weapons, I was like, bro, this is Thanos.
I can't unhear him in anything else.
No, it's just so incredible. It's such an incredible voice. And so Kevin Feige even joked that the actor's forehead was inspiration for the character. And his overall look and design, just because that's what his voice feels like. And
yes.
I was like, damn, all right,
yeah.
That's cool. So that brings us to the baseline here, buddy. Like, do we see a future for this character in the MCU?
I don't think.
No.
Anything more than like a cameo of like a flashback or something.
Yeah.
A mention.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
No. I agree. There's just no way. You can't rock perfection without destroying it. You know what I mean?
Like,
there's just no way. Yeah. I think if King Thanos is all we see, I'll be good with that. I would love a flashback of some sort, but only if it actually adds to the story.
Yes.
Otherwise, we don't need to see him again. He is dead and buried. He made his mark. Thank you, Thanos,
yes,
for all that you've done.
I agree.
And as for suggested reading, definitely tough because a lot of Thanos content is incredibly well written by incredible writers and creative teams. But for the Fab Four, 1991's Infinity Gauntlet, of course, from Jim Starlin, George Perez, Ron Lim, Joseph Rubinstein, Tom Christopher, Bruce Solotoff, Max Scheele, and Ian Laughlin. 2006's Annihilation crossover event, which spans multiple years and titles, and thankfully has been collected in complete editions for reading. That's the storyline where Drax ripped the hell out of Thanos' heart from his chest. It's intense. He like had momentary powers and he just reached in and he pulled Thanos' heart right out. It's pretty crazy.
Jeez.
1972's The Thanos War event, which really brought on the big battle concept between Thanos and his conflict with the Avengers, especially Captain Marvel, which is Mar-Vell in that time. And then, of course, any of the Thanos titles, especially 2019's Thanos Solo series, which I really enjoyed, from Teenie Howard, Ariel Olivetti, and Antonio Fabella. So, all that said,
my gosh,
that's the end of the show.
This guy was just... Basically, you're saying how bad of a person he is.
Yes. And it's, you know what's crazy is that he's not even necessarily bad. He's just so unmoved.
He thinks there's a solution.
Yeah.
But it's just the wrong way of going.
Oh, it's just completely the worst anticipated version of anything.
Yes.
It's very, yeah, it's incredible. He is a villain of villains, but I still think, I don't find him as bad as some of the other villains are. Is that crazy?
Like he does. Yeah. Fortunately, I do understand that.
Yeah.
Like it's just like.
The Green Goblin's a bad person.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He
Thanos
does really
is just
bad
like,
things.
He has. He has a goal.
Yeah.
And he's just not going to do anything. He's not going to let anyone stop him from achieving
his
goal.
That's what he wants. He will do it no matter what.
Like, there's a reason why for like. Nemesis It's not like a certain amount of people. It's just like those people just got in his way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Like Vaughn, like Doom.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just a crappy person.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he hates Reed so much.
He can't be smarter
there's
than
no
me.
No way.
Yeah. But yeah, Thanos, there's nobody. And it's actually kind of ass backwards because he's doing it all for love.
Sure.
But it just happens to entail the fact that he doesn't want anybody to exist.
Sure. It's like, I think there was a theory or maybe it was like an observation of like the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like he doesn't need to kill you unless he like needs to.
Right.
He
had so many opportunities. He could have killed Thor and he
didn't. At the end of, was it the end of Infinity War? Infinity War when he has all he needs, he's trying to get to Vision.
Yeah.
And like everybody's trying to stop him. Like he could easily kill all of them. Obviously he could have killed, you know, Black Widow, Captain America, everybody. But he's just like, no, I only just need to. It's unfortunate that he has to kill Vision because he needs the stone.
The stone.
But he wouldn't have done it if, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's
just so funny. It's just like thinking of him just trying to pluck it out of, it's like trying to pick up a quarter from the floor.
Pretty much.
And he's just whoops. Will.
Sorry, dude.
Sorry.
Yeah, need this.
Kind of incredible. Yeah. An incredible character. And obviously we barely scratched the surface with this guy. But such a fun character with incredible lore.
I love him.
Yeah, he's so good. That's why I'm like, don't touch him. Like, just leave him alone. He's good. He's good. But yeah, so thanks for listening. So as far as the next episode goes, this is, once again, the end of the year, which means we've come to the end of another season of the show.
My gosh.
Yeah, so tune in 2 weeks for our annual Marvel mashup, courtesy of Jeffrey.
Oh, yeah.
Highlighting some of the season's funniest and best moments. And we'll catch you fresh in the new year with some brand new character studies. And of course, we appreciate the support of all of our listeners, followers, and streamers. And of course, thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. And a special We Are Groot salute to Laura, Chris, Nats, Ed, Joliz, Melanie, Ashley, Andrea, Robin, Ariel, Tyler, Katie, Sherry, Andrew, and Jenny.
Woo!
Follow us on social at STRKCNTRST. And if you experienced ads during this episode, you can unlock an ad-free version of this podcast by supporting us on Patreon. If you like what you hear, remember to review, rate, and subscribe.
Once again, thanks for listening. We will catch y'all next year. Wow. Bye.
Bye.
You could not live with your own failure. Where did that bring you? Back to me.